The opinions expressed on the Rob Report are the opinions of the host, participating callers and or listener emails, texts and or letters, and are not necessarily the opinions of WDAY or Forum Communications.
Afternoon, it's Rob Port, 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. I am happy to be with you. Boy, we got a lot to talk about today. Election was last night. Some surprises here in North Dakota. We'll talk about them. And by the way, speaking of the election, coming up later in the program, we're going to talk to the two big winners on the statewide ballot. Congressman-elect Kelly Armstrong is going to be on the program. He'll join us at 1 o'clock to talk about his campaign. It's his successful campaign and what's now going to be a transition into Congress. Everybody keeps asking me when these guys take office. Usually it's January is the transition. So now obviously Congressman Kramer is still going to be Congressman Kramer until January, and then he'll become Senator Kramer. Senator Heitkamp will be Senator Heitkamp until January, at which point she will no longer be in office. And, you know, Kramer, by the way, also being sworn in after January. So that'll be interesting. So we'll talk with them. Plus, you know, all the news, you know, we've spent months and months, years, really, talking about election night. It happened last night. I'll tell you, I was shocked at the outcome in North Dakota in the Senate race. I think I was saying yesterday that I thought Kramer was going to win. I thought it was going to be in like the 4, 5, 6 point range. I was not expecting Kevin Kramer to win by 11 points. That surprised me. I mean, that's a double digit win. That's a solid win over Heitkamp. I will tell you, early on last night, though, Ben, and I got a little loopy towards the end of the night. I got so tired. Last night, I have a Google Home in my bedroom.
Yeah.
That I use for music. I use it for an alarm. And also, as I'm going to bed, I'll like shout at it to take notes or to set reminders for the next day. Because a lot of times, you know, I'm going to be like, oh, I need to do this tomorrow, or I want to write about this tomorrow. So I was setting reminders on my Google Home last night, and I was so tired, and I went to sleep. And this morning I woke up, and one of the reminders, I'm sitting at my desk, I'm looking at one of the reminders is, write about algae grow.
What
was the reminder? Algae grow. It took forever. I had to crowdsource it. I put it on Facebook and Twitter, and somebody else figured it out. It's like, were you talking about Al Jagger? Yes, I was. That's
there
it exactly.
Go.
Google took that down as algae grow, but no, algae it was Al grow. Jagger. It is what I intended to talk about. I got a little loopy last night. I will tell you, I kind of figured early on that Heitkamp was done in and probably going to be done in by a substantial margin, because we started getting some results from rural western North Dakota counties. Now, you don't expect Heitkamp to win there. Western North Dakota, deeply Republican. We don't have it. I mean, there's a reason why there's no Democratic lawmakers elected west of Bismarck. And, in fact, there's just one in Bismarck. There's zero Democratic lawmakers, you know, elected in Minot. I think Rolette, up by the Canadian border, is about as far west as Democrats go in terms of electing people to the legislature. Anyway, they I started looking at some of these counties, and Senator Heitkamp's underperforming her 2012 election by significant numbers. So I'm watching this, one county after another from western North Dakota is coming in, and I'm thinking, wow, you know, if she's consistently underperforming by 7, 8, 9, 10 points, even though these are small population counties, that doesn't bode well. If that trend holds up to some of the more populated counties, she's in serious trouble. And then I saw Griggs County here. It's one of those eastern North Dakota rural counties, farm counties. I think it went by 7 or 8 points for Heitkamp in 2012. All of a sudden, Kramer wins that one by like 7 points.
Weren't there a number of counties throughout the state that flipped?
Oh, there were.
Yeah.
There were. But I'm just watching, like, as the county, when I saw Griggs County flipped, I thought, wow, this is going to be bigger than I thought it was. And indeed, it turned out, you know, Kramer wins by 11 points. That's a big, big number. And all the more remarkable. And I find there is a deep irony, I think, in the fact that we had a constitute measure one on the statewide ballot, which passed. Voters approved it. I think that's a mistake. In fact, I
Rob?
Lawsuits over it.
Oh, we lost you there for a second, Rob.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yep.
Yeah, there's going to be some lawsuits over Measure One. Let's put it that way. But so we passed Measure One, though, on the statewide ballot, and Measure One was motivated by the idea that you know, we got to get big money out of politics. Right, we got to get, you know, big money. All these deep-pocketed interests are buying their way into politics. But look at the Senate election. Right, through October 17th, which is the pre-general, I haven't gone through and looked at all their 48-hour reports or anything like that. But there's, even if we just look at Senator Heitkamp's spending through October 17th, which leaves out the last couple of weeks, Senator Heitkamp spent, her campaign spent over $16 million. On her campaign, $16,019,959. With 424 of 424 precincts reporting, Heitkamp received 143,737 votes. Then she spent $111.45 per vote, not even counting the last 2 weeks of her campaign spending.
Well, it's just another sign. It doesn't matter how much money you throw at it. If people don't want to reelect you, they're not going to reelect you.
She spent three times more on the race than Kevin Cramer did.
Mm-hmm.
She tripled what he spent on the race. Again, just through October 17th, not counting his last 2 weeks of the race either. Cramer spent about $27.67 per vote. But here's the thing. I mean, it wasn't just North Dakota. Look at Texas. Beto O'Rourke spent tens of millions of dollars more than Ted Cruz did. He lost. 2016 election. Hillary Clinton outspent Republican Donald Trump by a roughly 2-to-1 margin. And although she won the popular vote, she's not president today. So money's not everything in politics. You know, Democrats, Senator Heitkamp, she voted against Brett. That was her closing strategy, right? She voted against Brett Kavanaugh, and she was going to spend the last couple of weeks of her election trying to inflame her liberal base and getting out the vote. And they got out the vote. I mean, voter turnout was very, very strong in North Dakota. As a matter of fact, I was kind of laughing. I was seeing some of these national left-wing commentators on Twitter, and they were saying, the North Dakota suppressing the Native American vote had a lot to do with Heidi Heitkamp losing. I don't think so. Pretty sure the Native American vote turnout set records in tribal communities. I did a quick look in Rolette County and Sioux County, which is Turtle Mountain and Standing Rock. I wanted to look at the Fort Berthold Reservation and the Spirit Lake Reservations, but it's just those reservations don't fit perfectly in a county. I think Spirit Lake is in parts of five counties, and Fort Berthold is in parts of like half dozen counties. It's too hard to try to isolate the tribal vote, at least that quickly after the election. But suffice it to say, on Standing Rock and in Rolette County, not only did they vastly beat out the turnout in the last midterm election in 2014, but they got more turnout than they did in the last two presidential elections, 2016 and 2012. So don't tell me the Native American vote was suppressed in North Dakota. They got out in record numbers, and good on them. They went overwhelmingly for Heitkamp. I'm sure that was part of the strategy. It wasn't enough. Good on them. I'm glad they voted. They got engaged. They came out. They voted. They exercised their franchise. That's a good thing. But that whole narrative about voter suppression and everything else turned out to be bunk. Their votes weren't suppressed. They voted. They didn't. Heitkamp still didn't win. To me, all of that is just hugely interesting. I mean, all the money, whatever, it didn't matter. Ultimately, what mattered, what won at the end of the day, was what the candidates themselves were saying. That's what mattered. And you know what? That's what should matter. There's a lot of excuses. I was reading McFeely's column this morning, and it was all about, the headwinds of Donald Trump was too much for Heidi Heitkamp. And then I guess that I didn't listen to his show, but people were telling me, you know, I think they were enjoying some Schadenfreude listening to the senator's brother on his radio show this morning. I'll tell you, I didn't tune in because honestly, who cares? But I guess his argument was North Dakota's now the Mississippi of the North and it's Trump's party. And I mean, if you think about it, I guess what they're saying is that North Dakota voters are just a bunch of dumb rubes who have been bamboozled by Trump's and don't know how dumb they are not voting for Democrats who are obviously better for them. I mean, that's right. I kind of feel like that's the conceit to that argument, right? If it's all about Trump, then I guess we're all just a bunch of stupid rural rubes who have been bamboozled by Trump and don't know enough to vote for our intellectual betters in the Democratic Party. That kind of seems like what they're arguing. And I don't think that's true. I mean, I understand why they're making the argument. I understand why they have to make that argument. Because if they don't make excuses like that, if they don't deploy that sort of spin, then what they're left having to admit is that Heidi Heitkamp articulated a message that just wasn't convincing to the majority of North Dakota voters in a midterm election year that saw extremely strong turnout. Right? North Dakota voters got out the vote. They were engaged. They followed the race. They showed up at the polls. They voted their conscience. And they decided that Heidi Heitkamp wasn't it for them. And the thing is voters in North Dakota have been sending Democrats this message for a long time now. I mean, it's hardly just this election where North Dakota voters have said, hey Democrats, you're not doing it for us anymore. You're not who we want anymore, right? I mean, it's in one election after another, North Dakota voters have been saying that. And I mean, at some point, I feel like Democrats just have to listen. I mean, already I am hearing, I had people direct messaging me on Twitter this morning saying, you know, because I wrote a piece about a column that was in the paper this morning. And in the column, I argued that, you know, the Heitkamp era has been bad for Democrats. And I got some pushback. They're saying, oh, poor, you just don't want Heidi Heitkamp to run for governor in 2020. Right. You just want it so that Democrats just run weak candidates against the Republicans. That's not it at all. Please, Democrats, put Heidi Heitkamp on the ballot again. See what happens. Go for it. Right. Because I don't think she's if she continues to articulate the message she's been articulating, she's going to continue to lose. The problem, North Dakota Democrats, is your message. The problem, North Dakota Democrats, is what your party stands for. It's not what North Dakotans want. And they've been saying it for a while, a decade ago. North Dakota Democrats had 21 seats in the state Senate, 36 seats in the state House, control of the Agriculture Commission's office, and 3 seats in the federal delegation. Heading into election night, Democrats had 9 seats in the state Senate in 2018, just 13 in the House. They control 0 statewide executive branch offices and only Heitkamp's seat in the federal delegation. Now, last night, I do think Democrats gained 3 seats in the House. I think they gained a seat in the Senate. So they're up to 10 seats in the Senate. They're up to 16 seats in the House. Those are tiny, tiny minorities. They didn't even make up the seats that they lost in the 2016 election. Like, they're not even back to that level, and that level was already tiny. This is a thoroughly marginalized party. And at some point when the voters are telling you over and over again, we don't like what you stand for. You don't stand for us. We don't like your ideas. Maybe at some point it's incumbent upon you to change. Maybe at some point it's time to stop blaming national politics. It's time to stop blaming the president or anything else. Maybe Democrats, the problem is you. And what you stand for. And that's fine. I get it. Right. I mean, you can't just necessarily be for whatever's going to win you elections. I can understand taking principled stance. I have a number of positions that probably wouldn't get me elected on the statewide ballot. I get it. But just stop making excuses. Let's take a break. What do you think? What did you think of election night? What did you see last night that surprised you? What didn't surprise you? I want to hear it. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDY.com. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Welcome back, Rob Port, 970 WDY AM 93.1 FM, talking about those election results. Oh, by the way, we got a caller on asking, because Congressman Kramer is going to be on at 1:30, asking if he's on taking calls. Yeah, that's why he's on. It's Wednesday. He's on every Wednesday, which by the way, I think is pretty great. I think his willingness to do that, to come on again and again and again, contributed not insignificantly to his win. Senator Heitkamp actively avoided talking to people, talking to critics, putting herself in a place where she could be candidly asked questions by the public. Congressman Kramer, again and again, he came on this show, he came on other shows, he did town hall events, again, even went on the Senator's Brothers radio show. Again and again and again, made himself accessible to the public. And that mattered. And, you know, now, even after, I mean, he doesn't have to do it right now. Right? I think most people would understand that the day after Election Day, he probably doesn't need to come on the radio and take questions. But you know what? He's going to do it. He'll be on at 1:30. If you want to ask him comments, questions, whatever you want, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk@wdy.com. You can start emailing in your questions right now. Let's see. Caller, Ken, you're on. What's up?
Yeah, I think all in all, a pretty decent night for the Republicans. I mean, obviously losing the House, not good, but that thing can flip at any time. The seats that Trump lost was 34. Clinton at this point lost, I think, more than that, 50-something, and Obama 63. So it's kind of historical. The Republicans in the Senate, however, picked up seats and are inching closer to 60. I mean, remember, Alabama's going to come back in 2020 because of the whole Roy Moore thing. That's just kind of a goofy Democratic seat until the next 2020 election. If Trump could win re-election and they could squeak out the House and get a filibuster-proof Senate, that is a very powerful weapon that's within reach.
Well, I'll tell you, this morning I was looking at the 2020 Senate election map, right? Because every 2 years we elect a third of the Senate. 33. So next cycle... The map does not look good for Democrats there either. I mean, they're going to have a lot of seats to defend. So, and I want to, because we had a lot of talk about the blue wave, and there's a lot of talk now on celebration. Oh, the House is going to investigate Trump. The president, when a new president gets elected, losing like his party, well, I guess we've only had male presidents, his party losing control of one or both of the houses is the norm. What's actually out of the norm is gaining in the Senate. So it's not at all unusual. In fact, I think only twice in 1934 and 2002 have we seen a president. Have we seen a president come into his first midterm? We were doing it right after 9/11. I mean, something else.
Exactly, with an asterisk.
1934 was, sort of depressed. I mean, there were some unusual things. But it's typical. Now, I'm not saying, obviously, Democrats controlling the House, good for them. That has significant political implications. I don't want to minimize that at all. But what struck me about last night's election results is how normal they were, right? This is usual. This is typical. President Obama lost control of, saw his party lose ground in his first midterm. I mean, matter of fact, you could go all the way. In fact, we seem to be on sort of a 2 year back and forth. I mean, you go back to 2004. John Kerry lost in 2004. That begat a 2006 Democratic wave, which in turn begat President Obama's 2008 landslide begat the Tea Party and the 2010 wave. 2010 scared Obama and the Democrats, and Obama and they did pretty well in 2012, which in turn, riled up Republicans for 2014. We're in this back and forth cycle. So what happened last night, not unusual. I think all in all, Republicans did pretty good. They lost control of the House.
Incumbency is losing its luster. I mean, you've got Nelson in Florida, thud. You've got McCaskill in Missouri, thud. You've got potentially Tester in Montana, thud. I mean, you've got some names that have been around a long time, and that doesn't carry the currency that it used to, it seems.
It's looking like there are three, because it sounds like Montana went for Tester. That was a close race, but it sounds like he's over the top there. But and the ones that are still a little bit in doubt, Arizona, Florida, and there's a runoff, a special election that's going to happen in Mississippi. But it's looking good for Republicans. So if Republicans sweep those three, and that's sort of what everybody's expecting, you're looking at a 54-seat majority in the United States Senate. Boy, that's
plus
pretty good.
Alabama coming.
Yeah, plus you're right, plus Alabama. Ken, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Gonna take a break. We'll be right back after this. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk@wdy.com. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rockport 970, WDY AM 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk@wdy.com. Yeah, all in all, Democrats should be happy that they got control of the House. There's nothing at all wrong with them marking that down as a win in their book. I think the idea that this was some sort of an unusual, like, repudiation of Donald Trump. Similar things have happened to just about every president throughout history. FDR, JFK, Barack Obama. You go down the list. happen to all of them, right? You come to that midterm election and, you know, people vote against the president's party. It's just, I don't know. It's one of those quirks of American politics. And to me, what was surprising about last night is just how normal that is, how normal the outcome was, how in line in the Trump era, where so many of the norms of American politics have been torn down. Last night's elections nationwide were pretty normal. And if anything, I mean, Republicans, I think, can, I mean, they're marking a win down in their book as well, because while Democrats took the House, Republicans are looking right now at the very real possibility of a 54-seat majority in the United States Senate. They picked up a couple seats. So, or at least once all the votes are counted, it's sure looking like they're going to pick up a couple seats. So that's where we're at now. And, you know, Republicans could count that as a win as well. Let's go to the emails. Kurt writes, talking about Senator Heitkamp and spending over $111 per vote. Just a huge amount of money for North Dakota. Kurt writes, goes, that is a huge amount of money to spend. No wonder KFGO and McFeely were in mourning today. Oh. Let's see. Steve says, you are missing the point about Heidi. The North Dakotans love Trump so much that they did not want to send anyone to Washington that could be the deciding vote on whether to convict Trump upon impeachment. I just think that's such a dismissive attitude. And again, I understand why our liberal friends are doing it. You know, but it's bigger than that. I think this election was bigger than Donald Trump. Trump was a factor. There's lots of factors.
I was going to say, I don't think you can count out his popularity in the state, at least.
No, you can't.
No.
I'm not saying he's not a factor, but to say that it's just Trump, I think ignores the fact that for a decade now, North Dakota Democrats have gotten punched in the nose on election day after year, cycle after cycle after cycle by the North Dakota electorate. How many times does that need to happen before we wake up and say, hey, maybe North Dakotans don't like much of what the Democrats are standing for? Maybe there's some disconnect between what's important to North Dakotans, what's important to them culturally, what's important to them economically, what's important to them ideologically, is not what the Democrats stand for. I mean, not every North Dakotan, and I'm not saying that everybody just has to abandon their ideals to win elections. But here's the thing. You don't get to govern if you don't win elections. And for all our talk about big money in politics and as cynical as we get, at the end of the day, to win elections, you still got to give people something to vote for. And Heidi Heitkamp didn't do that. If it was just about money, she would have won. She spent three times more than Kevin Cramer did through October 17th. That's not even counting the last couple of weeks of spending, which I guarantee you, she outspent him in the last couple of weeks, too. Outspent him 3-1. And he still won anyway. And you know why? Because he had a different message. He had the message that most North Dakotans wanted to hear. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. Brad emails. He says, I was mostly surprised by the Secretary of State and Measure 3 outcomes. I predicted yesterday that Jagger was going to win. Al Jagger, the incumbent, was going to win in the Secretary of State race. He only got a plurality of the vote, though. Didn't get a majority. Michael Coachman, the third party. Remember in the lead up to Election Day, Ben, we were talking about these mailers that the Democrats were sending out promoting Michael Coachman. It seems to have worked to a point, because he got a pretty significant chunk of, I'm trying to pull up the election results now, but he got a pretty significant chunk of the vote. I mean, last I looked, he was at like 15, over 15% of the vote, which is pretty significant for a third party candidate to get that much. It still wasn't enough for Boucher, though. You know, it still didn't put Boucher over the top. Boucher was, I think, down in the 30s somewhere. Here, I'm looking it up. Here it is. Josh Boucher, 39.22%. Al Jagger, 47.27%. Oh, Coachman lost a little bit from last time I looked. He was at 13.2%. Even that's pretty remarkable. I mean, Al Jagger did not receive the North Dakota Republican Party's endorsement at the state convention.
Nope.
Party endorsed Will Gardner. Will Gardner, who ended up withdrawing from the race amid scandal, but it turned out he had a peeping Tom conviction on his record that nobody knew about. So Al Jagger then had to put himself on the ballot as an independent. And then he had a third party candidate, Michael Coachman, who's a conservative guy, conservative pro-Trump guy. You had the Democrats actually sending out campaign messaging promoting Michael Coachman, and Al Jagger still wins by tens of thousands of votes. What? You know, I mean, what do you do?
Yeah, and I don't blame him for being surprised.
Yeah,
honestly,
I don't blame him for being surprised. And by the way, I thought Josh Boshay was probably the strongest outside of Heidi Heitkamp, was the strongest Democrat on the statewide ballot. Ryan Rauschenberger, tax commissioner, right, who got convicted of DUI earlier this year. He beat Kylie Overson by tens of thousands of votes, 58.59. He only got almost 60% of the vote. You know, a lot of that stuff's, you know, pretty amazing. In terms of Measure 3, were you surprised by the Measure 3 outcome?
Yes and no. At first, they were making a good, strong case for it, but as soon as the anti-Measure 3 people got out there and hit the ground running, I kind of started doubting that it was going to pass. I didn't think North Dakota was really going to go for it, I guess.
I think when it comes to ballot measures, I think the default position of North Dakotans is no, and you have to convince them to say yes.
Right.
And I think the problem the Measure 3 people have is I think most North Dakotans, if just asked the simple question, would you support legalizing recreational marijuana? I think most North Dakotans say yes to that question. The problem with Measure 3 is that there were real problems in the text. You know, you can't ignore some of the confusion it was going to create around inebriated driving. You can't ignore the fact that the expungement provision was going to be a nightmare to implement. I mean, they complicated that measure in some ways. In some ways, it was a complicated measure. It was flawed, and I think that's why it lost. It still got 40% of the vote, which is a respectable outcome.
Kudos to them for they're recognizing those concerns, it sounds like, and they're still going to work to try and get it legalized. So,
well, and this debate's going to continue into the legislative session. We had Shannon Rohrs-Jones, who's a Republican lawmaker from Fargo, who's going to introduce decriminalization a decriminalization bill and another bill regarding the expungement issue. I think it's going to be a one-two punch issue. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw other legislation as well. I'm hearing rumblings about it. So, you know, that'll be interesting. The debate's going to continue. And honestly, I think, although Measure 3 didn't pass, I think that the pro-marijuana people should look at it as a victory. Right? They did not. It was not such a showing that they should be embarrassed that I think they moved this debate down the field.
They should be proud of how far they got with it.
Yeah, they should be proud of how far they got with it. And I think it's going to continue the push towards more liberalized marijuana policies in our state. And I you know, that's a good thing. I think that's what those of us should want. Not surprisingly, Measure 4 passed, 64%. No surprises there. I didn't think that one should pass. Mostly just, it doesn't break my heart that it passed, but mostly I was never sure that free vehicle registrations is what volunteer first responders wanted. I mean, there's a cost to that. It seems to me if we're going to pay that cost, we should make sure it's what they want first. But it doesn't surprise me that most voters went in and said, hey, something nice for first responders.
Right. It's a nice thought, but
we love our volunteer first responders. I'm not surprised.
Of course.
Measure 2, which was banning non-citizen voting. Apparently, 34% of the population is in favor of non-citizen voting. I don't know. I don't know why anybody voted against that measure, but it passed. And Measure 1 passed. And I hope that somebody files suit against Measure 1 immediately. This is a terrible piece of public policy. And unfortunately, even if somebody files suit against it, we're probably only going to get parts of it struck down. Other parts of it are going to stick. This is Marzi's law all over again, except it's worse. It's worse. I mean, this is another example of you know, rich out-of-state interests, you know, pushing their way into our state and putting their personal hobby horse on our election. And unfortunately, I mean, the people who are opposed to this just didn't do a good job of articulating the counterargument. I mean, most people heard about this measure was that it was going to increase transparency and increase accountability, and it was going to get those dirty, evil lobbyists. And, you know, it was probably one of the most hypocritical campaigns on the statewide ballot. I mean, all talking about, you know, we got to get big money out of North Dakota politics, all these out-of-state special interests. And, you know, it was a bunch of Hollywood celebrities that put this on the ballot. So,
but it sounds great on paper to a lot of voters, probably. And they hear ethics, they think, oh, well, that's going to be
great. That's the problem.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. I mean, I was reading something. There was like a public radio reporter, I think in Minnesota, who is writing something about how depressing it is to watch, because on their website, they would have like informative pages on the different information pages on the different candidates and the different ballot measures. And they would talk about like 2 days before the election, they see this huge traffic spike to those pages. And you know what that is because most voters are tuning in a couple of days before the election, at least to those. I think a lot more voters watch the top of the ticket races, like the Senate race, congressional race, those competitive races. I think people do pay a lot of attention to those. You start getting down the ballot into the ballot measures, into the statewide races, into the legislative races, and I think that's a different matter. And people sort of scramble at the last minute to figure it out. And that's unfortunate because I think most people, when it came to Measure One, they probably went in, they looked at the language that was on the ballot. It said ethics and accountability and transparency. Those are all things most of us are for. And so they voted for it, not understanding that it's actually not that great of a measure. I'm looking across the ballot. Let's see. Heidi Heitkamp got 44%. Max Schneider got 35%. Boshe got 39%. David Thompson, who ran for attorney general for the Democrats, got 32%. Jim Dotsenrod, who ran for ag commissioner, got 32%. Gene Brandt got 38%. Casey Buckman, 38%. Those two were the Democrats running for public service commissioner. Kylie Overson got 41%. So two Democrats on the statewide ballot got over 40%, and both of them barely got over 40%. Their top of the ticket candidate barely got over 40%. Kylie Overson barely got over 40% against a guy who got a DUI last year. If I were the Democrats, I would not be comfortable with this at all. And, you know, again, I think North Dakota Democrats have come to a time when they probably need to divest themselves from the hike camps. I mean, you look nationally, and this was my print column today, if you track that down. Nationally, after the 2016 election, you saw Democrats making a concerted effort saying this can't be the party of the Clintons anymore. This can't be a party that's organized around doing what's best for the Clintons anymore. I think North Dakota Democrats got to start to feel that way about the hike camps. This can't be a political party that's organized around what's doing what's best for Joel Heitkamp's radio show anymore. It can't be a political party that's organized around just doing what's best for Heidi Heitkamp anymore. They've got to start developing some other talent. They've got to start winning some down ballot elections. You can't just pluck some candidate out of the ether to run for the office for the United States Senate. I know after the 2016 cycle where we saw candidates like Doug Burgum locally, Donald Trump nationally, you start to think that that sort of thing's possible. But I'm sorry, most candidates need, those are special cases. Most candidates to be successful at a top of the ballot race need to have some success being elected in down ballot races. And Democrats just aren't doing it, because they're so busy promoting the hike camps that they're not developing their other talent. And now who's left after Heidi Heitkamp? Right? Everybody thought, well, Heidi Heitkamp run for governor. Stop talking about that. Where are the other talented Democrats? Is it Max Schneider? Max Schneider just got obliterated in the U.S. House race after losing his seat in the state Senate in 2016. Kylie Overson, the former chair of the party, just got obliterated in the tax commissioner race by a guy who got a DUI last year after losing her seat in the legislature in 2016. Ryan Taylor, former legislator, lost successive elections in 2012 and 2014 for governor and ag commissioner. Who's left for the Democrats? Maybe quit focusing on what's best for Heidi Heitkamp all the time and A, start standing for things that North Dakotans want, and B, start developing some down-ballot talent. More to come straight ahead. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back. We're on Port 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Let's see. Emailer says, sorry, Rob, that's BS. Address, he's talking about Measure 3 now. And I said that if Measure 3 had cleaner language and was just more focused on the question of should recreational marijuana be legal, would have passed. Dwayne says, sorry, Rob, that's BS. Address all the issues of how it was written and it still fails. And Shannon Roars will disappear now. I don't think that's true. Measure 3 was flawed. I think if it was written better, it passes. And I don't think Shannon Roars is going to disappear. I think she supports the idea of decriminalization. She's going to put her bill in the legislature. It'll get fair hearing. I don't know if it'll pass or not. But I guarantee you her bill will get introduced. It'll get votes in the legislature. we'll see what happens. Let's see, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329, email talk at WDAY.com. Sean messages says, the biggest question, when will Measure One's constitutionality be challenged at court, before implementation or after? I don't know. I'm not a lawyer. I think sometimes there's a problem. Can you challenge a law before it's even, like, in effect? Right? I mean, I'm not a lawyer. But I wonder, is that like a standing question? I mean, do you have to have somebody who is actually impacted by the law before you could bring suit and challenge whether or not it's constitutional? I think you do. So there may have to be. And you know what? I should reach out to the ACLU because I asked them this question. The ACLU came out and they opposed Measure 1 on constitutional grounds. And I think that they were spot on accurate. I think Measure 1's got First Amendment problems, big ones. And I asked him if it passed, if they would file suit, and they kind of demurred. They didn't say no, though. So I might need to circle back with them and see where they're at on Measure 1, because I think somebody should file suit on Measure 1, because it does violate our First Amendment rights. And now the problem is that Measure 1, in addition to when it takes effect, also directs the legislature to enact certain laws. So I wonder if we're going to have to wait and see how the legislature handles it before we challenge it in court. I just don't know. There's a lot of open questions there. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Hey, Congressman-elect Kelly Armstrong is going to be on the program. He won last night. He's going to be replacing Kevin Cramer in the House because Kevin Cramer's replacing Heidi Heitkamp. He's on next hour, too. Taking your phone calls because he's still your congressman until January. You can call in, ask him whatever you want. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Start emailing your questions now. Talk at WDAY.com. We'll be right back. Don't go away. Baby's good to me. You know she's happy as can be. Welcome back. Rob Port, 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. All right. My guest now is, well, Congressman-elect Kelly Armstrong. Kelly, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Rob. How are you?
I'm doing fine. You did pretty good last night. You got over 60% of the vote. Your opponent, Max Schneider, got 35.57% of the vote. You did that despite a right-of-center independent candidate taking up about 4% of the vote, about 13,000 votes. You did good. Why'd you win?
I think we won because we have the right message. We I've worked hard for the state of North Dakota as a state senator, as party chair, and we worked really hard to get out. You know, with the Senate race going on, we were never going to compete money-wise, so we worked as hard as we could, Rob, to get to every community we could and meet with as many voters as possible. And those kind of meetings are actually, in a lot of ways, better, even if they're not quite as efficient, because you'd sit down with 15, 20 people, have coffee, and answer questions. You know, in this political climate, I find that a lot of people would much rather do that than hear your 10,000-foot campaign overview speech.
Yeah, I think that's right, and particularly in North Dakota. I mean, I think a lot of times we forget we're a state. I mean, we're a large city in another state, and yet we have two senators and a congressman and mayors. And, I mean, we expect, I think, it's still a very personal relationship with our elected leaders, and it sounds like you feel like that. That approach is what, you know, propelled you to victory.
Yeah, well, I mean, yes, and more importantly, it was a lot of fun to do. I mean, it's a lot easier to argue against more federal involvement in a limited federal government when you get to know the people in North Dakota, get to know the people serving, whether it's Governor Burgum, all the statewide officials that got elected. So it's a really easy case to make, and people in North Dakota are proud. We do a lot of things really well here. And it's just fun to be a part of that.
Now you're elected. Tell us a little bit. A lot of people have been asking me about, like, what's the transition process when you get elected? And I realize this just happened for you last night, but I mean, you're probably going to get sworn in early January. But I mean, what does this process looks like as you transition into being North Dakota's at large congressman?
Yeah, I mean, and it's already started. I mean, there's other members of Congress reaching out. Obviously, we're going to be serving in the minority, and we fly out to D.C. on Monday for a week for orientation. come home for a week. We'll get out and see as many North Dakotans as we can, go back again for a second week of orientation, and then we get sworn in January 3rd. But really, I mean, we're starting right now trying to work on just various different things, figure out where different things are at. Obviously, the farm bill is important. There's a lot of things going on. So we're just kind of getting the lay of the land, taking it all in, and working ourselves forward right away.
Now, you mentioned, like I said, you're going to be in a Republican minority now in the United States House. Republicans have the majority now, but that is no more. Republicans are now in the minority, and we're still seeing, you know, results come in, so we don't know how big of a minority. But, I mean, that is what it is. It also sounds like, and obviously, I mean, there's still probably some time here. Maybe there'll be some developments. I don't know. But it sure looks like Nancy Pelosi is going to be Speaker of the House. How are you going to approach that as somebody who represents a state like North Dakota now in a minority that is governed by the Democratic Party in the Trump era? I mean, what the dynamics of that? Tell us what's your approach going to be?
Well, first of all, I'm hopeful, although not overly optimistic, that it doesn't devolve into a clown show. I mean, if we're working on issues, I've said, bipartisanship for the sake of bipartisanship is never a good thing. What we need to do, I mean, there are huge fundamental differences between Republicans and Democrats. That being said, we need to get a farm bill passed. We need to continue to work to make the Trump tax cuts permanent. And I'll build coalitions with whoever it is, whether, I mean, all across the country, all across the Midwest, if it's good for North Dakota. So I think now the first thing to do is just to start develop with relationships with other members of Congress. Because obviously there's 435 members. North Dakota has one. We can't get anything done alone, majority or minority. So we have to build some relationships and start to figure out who has the same ideas about what's best for the Midwest and best for the country and start moving some policy agendas forward.
I imagine that the House is going to be, I mean, from what Democrats have been saying, you know, what a lot of the Democrats that are cheering, you know, about the fact that their party took over the House is they're saying, you know, now we can investigate the Trump administration. We can, you know, have committees to exercise oversight powers. We can even impeach the president. How are you going to handle those debates?
Yeah, I'm going to fight with them. And I'm going to defend our president and I'm going to defend our republic. And I mean, we're going to be a part of that process. I know Congressman Schiff's already talking about issuing subpoenas. The election's not even 12 hours old, and I hope cooler heads prevail and we work towards things like transportation bills, farm bill. I mean, things that really need to get done, and they need to get done quickly. But if we're working towards the things in North Dakota, I'll be good. But if we're going to be in the middle of a scrum, I'll be right there in the middle of it with everybody else.
Well, I think that it's interesting you say that. What I thought was remarkable about last night's election results is how normal they were. You know, we've come through the Trump era where Trump certainly upended a lot of things about politics. People have different views about whether or not that's a good thing. I think it's generally a good thing. But, I mean, it's you know, the Trump era has been unusual. Well, let's put it that way. And yet last night we saw election results come in pretty typical for the first midterm election of a new president. The president's party typically doesn't do that well. If anything, the results were a little bit unusual in that they were kind of good for Republicans and that we gained. It sure seems like we've gained some ground in the United States Senate, not least because Congressman Kevin Cramer, your predecessor in this office now, who's going to be on at 1:30 taking questions, is in a position where he feels he picked up a seat for Republicans. But I mean, to me, what you're talking about, this was a normal election. And part of me wonders if, okay, well, we've had a normal election, like the sky hasn't, you know, Trump didn't get elected. The sky hasn't fallen. It's not revolution in the streets. Maybe a new Congress could just do some work, right?
Yeah,
just do some normal work.
So. And you're exactly right. You know, it was a really tough, I mean, just purely politics outside of any policy, any ideology, anything. It was a very tough map for Republicans in the House last night, and it was a very tough map for Democrats in the Senate last night. And and the elections are bearing that out. You know, each individual race, there were upsets in different parts of the country, but I agree with your assessment. I mean, it was a midterm election with a sitting president. Historically, it has gone that way in the House. And just, I mean, the Democrats were defending too many vulnerable incumbents in the Senate, and people ran good campaigns. I think when you get past all the noise and the rhetoric, I tend to agree with you.
When I'm hearing a lot of our liberal friends today, what they're saying is that this election, it was all about Donald Trump, and North Dakota voters just don't like they like Donald Trump, but they don't like the idea of him being impeached. And so that's why they voted, you know, overwhelmingly for Republicans like Congressman Cramer, like yourself. I think that's too simplistic. I mean, there's no question that President Trump and his agenda, we're talking about federal policy. Who the president is matters, but I don't think it was just about that. I look at this election. I look at one election after another, going back a decade, going back more than a decade. It seems to me like North Dakota Democrats are struggling and have struggled for a while, despite the variables of any given election cycle, to connect to what North Dakotans want to hear and what North Dakotans want to see done. That's what I see the problem is for Democrats. Not that it's Trump, not that it's anything particular to this cycle even. I think they're just having trouble. North Dakotans are having trouble connecting with what Democrats are standing for.
Yeah, I think the National Democratic Party, as much as anything, has caused a lot of problems in North Dakota. The identity politics and the gotcha moments are just not something North Dakotans feel is appropriate. And so, I mean, they had a talented slate. It was as good a slate as they've put up in over a decade, and it just didn't pan out for them. And I think I agree with you. If you want to talk about this election in that regard, then you'd have to ignore the history of about the last six elections in North Dakota where Republicans have done tremendously well. I think what is really interesting and encouraging is the high turnout in North Dakota last night. You know, in the primary election, we were talking about the paltry turnout, and there were really big contested city elections and things going on all across the country. But, I mean, we had a huge turnout all across the state, and I think that is encouraging because people are engaged and people want their voices to be heard.
Including a big turnout, by the way, in our tribal communities, which I thought was wonderful. Everybody who wants to vote should vote. I think that was great. I think it runs contrary to a lot of the rhetoric. I think that was unfortunately motivated by partisan considerations. But it runs contrary to this rhetoric that voters were suppressed. Far from it. North Dakotans got the vote out in a big way, and that's to the good.
Yeah, before the Supreme Court decision, North Dakota is far and away the easiest state in the country to vote in. You know what? After the Supreme Court decision, North Dakota is still the easiest state in the entire country to vote in, and we should be proud of that. It is a fantastic deal. There's nowhere else in the country without voter registration. You can walk into the polls. You can make your voice be heard. These limited protections on voting rights are not going to disenfranchise anyone. And I hope in 2 years we have a higher turnout than we did this year. I want every North Dakotan to be able to vote. Even the ones who aren't voting for Republicans, even the ones who aren't supporting me, because we represent everyone, not just the people who agree with us.
Yeah, I agree. Now let me ask you. You mentioned a couple of priorities going into Congress. You know, the farm bill. I mean, stuff like that makes sense. What about introducing legislation? I mean, do you have some bills in your back pocket, some ideas that you'd like to put on the table right away?
Well, yeah, I have some ideas. Whether they go into their own bill or they go into existing legislation, you know, I've worked really, really hard in North Dakota on opioid and addiction treatment. To help try move some of those things forward. Congress has been working on that very well. Actually, in the middle of the whole Kavanaugh circus, a huge bipartisan opioid bill passed both chambers of Congress. I think those are issues we can work with everybody, Republicans or Democrats, all across the board. I think transportation funding and infrastructure funding is a conversation that needs to continue to move forward. You know, it's over 10 years ago that the I-35 bridge collapsed in Minneapolis, and we have seen no real substantial infrastructure package come out. As somebody who's worked on infrastructure in Western North Dakota, I can just tell you how important it is for commerce, but more importantly, for the communities around the state. So, yeah, I think there's issues we can work on right away. Obviously, the farm bill is going to have to be huge priority number one. It needs to be. Hopefully, they get something done during the lame duck Congress, but we're not going to take anything for granted and start getting in touch with everybody right now. That's a good one because Senator Cramer and Senator Hovind were both on the committee, so we have an immediate resource right there. Colin Peterson is going to end up, I would guess, being the chair on the Democrat side. So that's a really good North Dakota, Minnesota bipartisan base on things we can work forward with right away.
Kelly, thanks for your time and good luck.
Yeah, Rob, anytime. We'll have to set up. some kind of regular schedule. I got some big shoes to fill in accessibility, and I want to do everything I can to do that.
All right, I'm open to it. We'll have that conversation. Kelly, thanks. We're going to take a break. This is, yeah, absolutely. This is the Rob Report, 970 WDYM, 93.1 FM. Don't go away. Welcome back. Rob Report, 970 WDYM, 93.1 FM. Senator-elect Kevin Cramer joins me next, coming up at 1:30, and he's taking your calls. It's a town hall. Yeah, he's still, by the way, he's still our congressman until the end of the year. We're going to have a lame duck session of Congress. They still got some work to get done. Hopefully they get some work done. But anyway, that's, you know, he's going to be on. He'll be taking your calls, and you can start getting your questions in for him now if you want. Talk at WDY.com is the email. You can call in 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk, or like I said, email talk at WDY.com. All right, emailer Dana says, the Democrats can't get anywhere because they only want to find fault in the Republican Party and how they can stop any progress in helping with trade issues, natural disasters, grain prices, health care costs, or any other problem our economy is having. It is because they are stuck in the Bill Clinton era, and the people are considered stupid. You know the phrase from Bill Clinton on TV with all his gang standing around him, it's the economy stupid. Well, first of all, it's the economy stupid. The stupid of that part of that was not directed at the electorate. It was not directed at the public. That was a message that was directed, you know, it was like Clinton calling himself stupid, right? It was him reminding himself, the issue is the economy stupid, right? So I wasn't calling the electorate stupid. As to the other point about, you know, what ails the Democrats, I will say politics is about persuasion, right? I realize it can be hard to see that these days when so much of politics is both sides just trying to just it seems like a competition to see who can most viciously impugn the other side. I will say, and again, this is coming from a conservative perspective, and I'm not saying that Republican hands are clean by any stretch of the imagination, but I will tell you, it can seem a lot of times when conservatives articulate a position on, say, entitlements, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, when Republicans articulate a position on, say, the voter ID law, the response from Democrats is typically not like a rebuttal, like this is why that policy won't work. The response is usually, well, you hate old people, or you hate poor people, or you're a racist. The problem is it's hard to have a debate with that, right? I mean, because you make that accusation, and now suddenly that's all we're talking about is, well, am I a racist? Are you a racist? Who's a racist? Who hates old people? Who hates poor people? Like, why is that?
You can't really have a civil discussion when the other person is saying you're a bad person right out the gate, basically. Yeah.
And so I think in a state like North Dakota, where I think people just sort of organically are a little bit right of center. I think the majority position of North Dakota, I don't know that North Dakota is as a conservative as sometimes we give it credit for. I think North Dakota has become more red as the Democrats have moved left. It sort of left the North Dakota electorate behind. But to the extent, I think it's fair to say North Dakota voters are right-of-center voters, yeah, on the whole. And so I think it becomes hard for them to accept. Like, they might be willing to be persuaded by a Democratic argument on voter ID. I mean, you could maybe, I don't think North Dakotans are unreasonable people. They're bipartisan people. For a long time, North Dakotans have voted for both Republicans and Democrats on their statewide tickets prior to the last few election cycles, but it's happened in the past. I think it could definitely happen again. I think the problem is Democrats aren't trying to persuade those voters anymore. You know, now it's all about, it's sort of the Obama era formulation about always being on the right side of history, right? You're either with us or you're on the wrong side of history.
It's who's ever the more morally righteous, basically.
Right. And I don't think that's a way to persuade people. Right. Because even if you start to maybe persuade somebody, say, boy, you know, I kind of think Democrats have the right of that. Well, that person probably knows a lot of Republicans who disagree. So I think sometimes like the Democratic, like some of the outrageous things they say about President Trump, I think even somebody who might be willing to be persuaded that President Trump's not a good president and that his policies are bad for the country, by saying such horrible things about the president and his supporters, that person probably knows a lot of people who voted for Donald Trump and support Donald Trump. And now you're saying your brother is a racist. Your brother voted for your uncle voted for a white nationalist, right? You're just not going to persuade a lot of people with that sort of rhetoric. And again, I'm not saying Republican hands. I'm looking at this from a conservative perspective. I'm not saying Republican hands are clear. But I think in North Dakota, that's a problem Democrats have. We are a right-of-center state, and Democratic rhetoric is pretty insulting to people who are right-of-center. We're going to take a break. Congressman Kevin Cramer, Senator-elect Kevin Cramer joins us next, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. If you want to get your questions in for him, you can email him to talk@wday.com. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
But I found myself in a place that I've never been, a place that I thought.
Welcome back, Rob Port, 970, WDY AM 93.1 FM, 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk@wday.com. We should, in a moment here, have Congressman Kevin Cramer, Senator-elect Kevin Cramer. In fact, I think he may be calling in right now. So hopefully we'll get him on the program. Get your questions in. It's his regular. He's been doing this for a while now. He's on every week. He takes your comments and questions, whatever you want to talk about. 701-293-9000 if you want to get in. 888-970-9329. Email talk@wday.com. And let's go to Kevin right now. First of all, Kevin, congratulations.
Thanks, Rob. It feels good. It feels real good.
Why do you think you won?
I think I've been a better congressman for the last 6 years than Senator Heitkamp was a senator. I think it's pretty basic for people. They were able to compare two people that have been working for them for 6 years in the same, in the same city, in the same place, dealing with the very same issues. And I think people like my approach to it better than they liked her approach. Just match North Dakota better.
Let's go to the phones. Caller, John, you're on. What's up?
I have waited from the day of the first announcement to say this, and I'm not waiting until January. Congratulations, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you.
And I'll tell you, you summed up exactly the reason why you were elected, and gun owners like me played a part in that, because I can tell you I voted for Heidi the first time around, and I felt sold up the river for the last 5 years now. So all I can say is, Kevin, don't forget about us out there, and certainly don't forget to get on Rob's show in the future.
No, I plan to keep that up, John. I really, as you know, cherish these opportunities that Rob and others have given me to communicate in this way. It's a two-way communication street, which is obvious by the conversation we're having right now. So I look forward to continuing it.
Yeah, for sure, and it sounds like our congressman-elect Kelly Armstrong was just on the show. He said he's got big shoes to fill when it comes to being accessible. So, we're totally open to continuing that. Let's see, caller Dana, you're on. What's up?
Hey, good afternoon, everyone.
Good afternoon.
Congratulations, Kevin. I'm one of the people that voted for you, and I'm very happy you won.
Thank you very much. Well, it took a lot of people. I'll tell you one thing, you guys. I don't know about you, but I was surprised at the turnout. I mean, I knew it would be a big midterm turnout, but it was a big turnout for any term, midterm or presidential, with over 310,000 voters in this race. That was a shocker to me.
I have two questions, sir.
Shoot.
I asked you before about setting up a meeting to introduce a plan to change the policies of our country with Donald Trump.
Yes.
I emailed your scheduler today on top of that. And then I wanted to know if you still think it's a good idea and you want to do it. And then I also wanted to know, what's the schedule like for the rest of the year for Congress and Senate? Are they going to get anything done?
Well, first of all, with regard to the other question, I think if the suggestion is, can I line up a meeting for you to sit with the president and talk to him, I'm sure we can try to work on that, but I will be honest, it's a very, very difficult thing to get done. But you never know when he might come this way and you could be part of something. We'll have to work on that. But with regard to the rest of the year, you raise a really important point. I actually think that the rest of the year presents some opportunity. And the reason I say that is, we have the Farm Bill. It's still pending. We have the conference committee that's been formed. Of course, Senator Hovind, Senator Heitkamp, and I are all on the Farm Bill Conference Committee. And with the election, I think there's even more incentive for both the House and Senate members, the Republicans and Democrats, to wrap this thing up this year rather than start over with a new farm bill, because the political reality is already clear, and we already have a template, and we have pretty good bills. I expect we'll get that done. We have to do some appropriating yet for the rest of the fiscal year. Most of it's done, but there's still some things to wrap up there. And one of the things to wrap up is, I think, it's Homeland Security. So it's a pretty big appropriations that we have to get done yet.
Caller, Jay, you're on. What's up?
I want to call about what I was told during the campaign. Now, I know I saw the debate between you and Heidi, where you accused her of telling lies about how you tried to enrich yourself in different unethical ways. And I don't know all the details about that. But then there's been a couple of lies told about Heidi. And then one of them wasn't by you. It was by some dark money extremist group that said that she had voted to send American money, American taxpayer money, to the government of Iran. And that is not even taking into account the facts or the history. Iranian money was seized during the Iran hostage crisis and held for a long time, money and other assets of theirs. And it was held until they would not only return the hostages, but pay the hostages or their families for all the time in captivity and to settle a lot of disputes that existed. And when those stated goals were met, then Iran asked to get their money. And and I know you can move the goalposts and keep changing the demands and add new demands, but when the original demands were met, it was thought it's time to send their money back. And so it was sent back, and the Iranian government didn't want it in dollars. They wanted it in foreign currencies, and it was flown over there by, as I understand, the military.
Okay, do you have a question,
aircraft.
Jay?
So talk about that one line. I'll have another one for you next time.
Thanks, Jay. Go ahead, Kevin.
So if I understood him right now, I was losing him about every few sentences, but he's referencing the pallets of cash that the Obama administration sent over as part of the Iran nuclear deal. His point was, I think what the caller's saying is that was Iran's cash in the first place that had been seized by the United States government in the dispute and sanction dispute and whatnot. I think his point is that was technically their money, not the United States money paying them off. He may have an accurate point there. However, I would also add that a big part of that Iran nuclear deal wasn't just sending the pallets of cash. It was releasing markets for Iranian commerce to be done at places, including, having banking opportunities to use to free up their own commerce opportunities throughout the global markets. So there was a lot of benefit to Iran. Whether the technical language of the ad is accurate, I don't know, and I'm not even sure. I don't even know what ad he might have been talking about. I think he said it wasn't a Kramer ad. It was obviously one of the outside groups. But to suggest, by the way, that outside groups play fairly fast and loose with the facts would be an understatement.
We got an email from Brad. He goes, first of all, congratulations. Second, were you surprised by the double-digit win?
I was not surprised by the double-digit win, actually. The 11% margin was exactly what our polling had been showing for the last several months, really last 3-4 months at least. So I wasn't surprised by that at all.
I'll tell you, I didn't think you were going to win by that much, Kevin. I thought you were going to win. I was going to be closer. I'll tell you what surprised me was when we started seeing some of the first results to pop up were in Western North Dakota, some of the first counties to report. And I was looking at those, and Senator Heitkamp was underperforming in Western North Dakota, 7-8. I didn't expect her to win. Those are counties. Those are very Republican counties. But, I mean, she's underperforming her 2012 numbers by 7-8%. And then all of a sudden, Griggs County popped up in Eastern North Dakota, which was a rural Eastern North Dakota county that she won by 7 or 8 points in 2012. All of a sudden, you won that one by 7 or 8 points. And I said, holy cow. This is this is gonna be pretty good. I was surprised, and I feel like what really hurt. And there's never one variable I think you can hang something like this on. These campaigns are complex. The reason why people vote are complex. But I think the way North Dakota Democrats have ignored Western North Dakota for so long really came back and bit them. You mugged her. You flat out mugged her in Western North Dakota.
But remember what's on the ballot in a race like this. You know, it's not a vacuum. Like you said, it's complex. But in our case, there are two voting records you get to put side by side. And, you know, her abandoning Venting and Flaring, for example, abandoning Western North Dakota on the Venting and Flaring rule, or she cast a deciding vote against repealing it, that was really, really costly to Western North Dakota. You know, her pro-choice positions. You remember 6 years ago when she ran, she said she would support banning late-term abortions and that she would vote banning federal funding of abortions. Well, when given the opportunity to do those things, she turned her back on the North Dakota position, and particularly Western North Dakota, which is very conservative, a lot of conservative Catholics in Western North Dakota. And so suddenly she had this record she had to try to disguise, and it didn't work. So it wasn't just about ignoring them, if you will, in a physical sense, but you know, in a spiritual sense, in a cultural sense, she really did abandon them, and whereas I did not. So 6 years later, he had two voting records to compare, which is very different than comparing, you know, two campaigns.
Roger asks on Facebook, he says, what can you do to speed up talks with China so our farmers can get their markets back?
Yeah, well, the good news is we'll be better informed, of course, being in the Senate, being able to be closer to all of that action. But, you know, the president and President Xi are meeting in the end of this month at the G20 summit, and they're planning on having a dinner, I think it's first day or two of December. So we already seen some movement in that direction. So hopefully that'll help it. We'll all keep the pressure on them, and we'll want to encourage the president to get a deal done that's good, but also get it done quickly.
Brock asks on Facebook, he says, he, referring to you, voiced support coverage for those with pre-existing conditions. Can we count on him to follow through with this campaign promise, even if Trump disagrees? Kevin also voiced supporting dropping marijuana from Schedule 1. Will he be proposing a bill once sworn in? If so, when?
Sure. So on the first question, absolutely. And the president himself has taking a strong position of protecting people with pre-existing conditions. On the Schedule 1 issue, I want to start discussing that immediately when I get to Washington. There is no reason that we can't just ignore that issue as a Congress. So I don't know what committee assignments I'm going to have or anything like that, but I'll be looking for like-minded members, both Republicans and Democrats, to at least face this reality that this is a direction our culture is going, even though Measure 3 did not pass in North Dakota. It's clear that there's a sentiment for that. And it's just Schedule 1 is not the place for marijuana. That's the place for a much different, more intense criminal activity than marijuana use.
Well, Kevin, you sound like you're struggling a little bit, so I feel like we should let you go. I think you had a big day yesterday. You sound a little tired.
Yeah, it was a long night, and I sound worse than I feel.
Well, Kevin, thanks for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Rob. Always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
That's Congressman Kevin Cramer. I will be right back. Going to take a break. 701-293-9000, 888-970-9329. Email talk at WDAY.com. Don't go away.
Don't let me hear you say life's taking you nowhere.
Welcome back. Rapport 970 WDAY AM 93.1 FM. A few minutes of the show left if you want to get in. Email talk at WDAY.com. Just finished up with Senator-elect Kevin Cramer. Kelly's holding on the line. Go ahead, Kelly. What's up?
Hi, Rob.
Yes, sir.
I miss Cramer, but I'd like to ask him about it. Trump, before he got elected, criticized the administration before him about the national debt. And now with the national debt increasing like it is, I'd like to find out his opinion on what how he considers that a conservative Republican.
Yeah.
So what is your view on that?
Well, Kevin's been asked that before, and his response, which I largely agree with, is that our national debt problem is a spending problem. I think we need to grow the economy. I don't think that we can be a country that is competitive with the rest of the world with the way that our tax code was. And I'd like to go further. I think where the Trump tax reforms missed the boat is they cut rates, but they didn't do nearly enough structural reform, you know, which I'm talking about just the actual code, that we have to comply with. I think there's a lot of work that we could do to streamline that would both save us money from an enforcement perspective, would just make the tax bureaucracy maybe smaller and easier without even necessarily touching rates again. So conceivably, it should save us money, bring in the same amount of revenue, and also save the public money in that complying with the tax code is just easier too. I would like to see some reform along those lines. But, I mean, if you want to talk about the problem with the national debt, it's spending. And, yeah, Republicans deserve criticism for spending under Donald Trump. They complained about spending, rightfully so, under Democrats. They complained about deficits and debt under President Obama and the previous Democratic majorities in Congress. They should have cared more about it than they did while they've been in power. So, and I think Congressman Kramer's been, he's not here to defend his own record on that. But that's my point of view is, we got to get spending under control. I'm just not sure there's enough
something done.
Yeah,
Reagan. I thought he was all right, but even his tax cuts—they at the time he was president, he tripled the national debt. But
so the problem
tax cuts given to the big boys and not the middle class people. I'm afraid we're going to get stuck. Our grandchildren and kids are going to get stuck with this debt, and it's just I'm just amazed.
Yeah, I think the thing is people say that up to when we talk about some of the biggest, financial burdens our government carries, like Social Security and Medicare, and then all of a sudden that concern about the generational debt suddenly dries up. And I honestly think a lot of the problem is not Congress, because both parties do it. Both parties talk about middle class tax relief and everything else, and they try to steer away from spending cuts. Both parties do it, and the reason why they do it is because that's what the electorate wants. Americans want low taxes, but they want big, expansive government programs. And so Washington delivers on that. And what we end up with are annual budget deficits that run into the hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars.
Yeah, I'm very surprised. Yep. I thought there'd be more conservative Republican side of that. But
conservative Republicans. Conservative Republicans deserve criticism. Democrats deserve criticism. It's the same. It's two sides of the same coin. It doesn't matter who's in office. We're running deficits. The debt's growing. I don't know that Democrats should get a pass on it either. They both suck. And honestly, I think we need to start giving the American people a pass on it. They're giving us what we're asking for, right? They're delivering. What we are asking for are low taxes and big government, and they're giving it to us. And the problem is, mathematically, that doesn't last long term. Kelly, we're out of time. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's it for me today. Jay Thomas Show straight ahead. You want to stay tuned for him? You can always catch me here 12 to 2 p.m. Monday through Friday, our 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at sayanythingblog.com. Thanks for listening. We'll talk again.